within 2 years, I understood it's stupid to work for somebody. It's totally stupid if you're smart. So why? You get penalized for stuff you've not done. For example, you're part of a team and somebody in the team makes a mistake, the whole team gets penalized. Your boss makes a mistake, you get penalized. The board makes wrong decisions, you still get penalized. You're not in control of your destiny and you don't know what you're doing.
Hello, fellow risk takers, and welcome to my worst investment ever. Stories of loss to keep you winning. In our community, we know that to win in investing, you must take risk, but to win big, you've got to reduce it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives. And I want to thank all my listeners from New Delhi for joining today. Fellow risk takers, this is your worst podcast host, Andrew Stotz from A-Stotz Academy. And I'm here with featured guest, Vivek Raina. Vivek, are you ready to join the mission?
Yeah, I'm enjoying taking risks. And I can assure you and your listeners that if you don't take risks, you're not going to reach anywhere. Yeah. For example, what I am trying to do over here, Andrew, is give internet access to unprivileged Indians. And, you know, in India, 70% of people living in urban India live in places which are not properly structured, live in places which don't have proper designs or proper plans. So structured, proper telcos cannot bring internet there. They don't know how to pull wires in such areas because these are cluttered areas, no plans, no designs. And big companies, they don't know how to do cabling in such areas because we're talking about bringing physical wire into every household. Yeah. And that's where I come in. This was my risk. I said, these people need to be connected to internet highway. They need to be provided world-class broadband service. And we need to unlock their potential to the economy. You see, these people don't have same schools for the children as people in other areas. They don't have same clubs. They don't have same sports facilities. But guess what? Internet is same. Broadband is same. Once you connect them to internet, they are at par with the rest of the world. And they can unleash their talent on the world. And today, I'm happy to say, because of this risk that I took, we have 1 million households connected in such areas with our internet service. And yeah, they are unleashing themselves to the world, as they say.
That's incredible. I mean, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives, but you already have helped 1 million people. So well done. And that's the beauty of capitalism. Let me introduce you to the audience. Just for those that haven't met or heard of Vivek, he's a seasoned veteran with over 2 decades of experience in the broadband industry. As a CEO and co-founder of Excitel, he leads the mission to connect Bharat, propelling the company to the top 3 ISPs in India, a remarkable feat in just 8 years. With 1 million subscribers spanning 55 cities, Vivek's leadership has revolutionized lives through pioneering unlimited internet broadband. Vivek, take a minute and tell us about the unique value that you are bringing to this wonderful world.
In your description of what I am doing, you use the word Bharat, and your audience would not be knowing what that means, Bharat. Okay, Bharat is that unstructured India for us. You know, when you say India, it is the India that is visible, structured, done properly, planned, and executed. Whereas Bharat is something which nobody looks at. It is the back alley nobody looks at. It's the back alley, you know, everybody forgot about. It's the back alley just evolving on its own. Yeah. And yet 70% of urban Indians live there. And our mission, as I said in my introduction, is to connect these Indians who have been left behind in this development train, to bring them on par with the rest of the world, to bring them on par with the rest of the Indians and unleash the talent, as I said. Yeah. So how do we do that? We use local resources. We use local partnerships. From the community, we bring in a partner who invests in the network, local last mile network in the area, and then maintains it for us. While as we do all the back end, we do all the technical stuff, we create packages, we bring fiber up to their premises, and the last mile is done by this partner. You know, it's like an Uberized version of broadband. For example, in the Delhi city alone, we have 700 such partners investing in last mile cable in their area and maintaining last mile cable in their area for us.
And yeah? how do you compensate them?
Revenue share, clear revenue right. share.
They have an incentive to keep that network running, to keep everything going. Somebody's got a problem, get out there, fix it.
Exactly. Now, it's easier said than done, Andrew. Mm-hmm. When we talk about 700 partners with 700 different backgrounds, and I said, this is Bharat. These are not really highly educated people, you know. So a lot of trainings need to be done. And not just training, a lot of processes need to be created. But hey, we're humans. We like to violate processes off and on. Then a lot of IT has to be put in. A lot of systems and softwares have to be put in to bind these partners to the mothership of Excitel and to create a flawless, seamless experience for customers. Because you cannot have 700 types of experiences in 700 places, yeah, across the city. You need to have one uniform experience, and that's the Excitel experience we want to create. For that, a lot of IT has gone into the system. Then these partners are, as I said, bound to Excitel through these IT systems. For a customer, it doesn't matter. Customer buys stuff from Excitel, you know, buys an Excitel package. All the customer touch points are managed by Excitel, customer service, payment, everything from Excitel. While this partner is in the back end, investing in the costliest part of the network. 70% of all capex that goes into the business is in the last mile for which we have partners. Yeah. Mm. So that's how we have done it. You see, right. We are a very small company. We have invested, let's say, in total, 20 million in this business till now. The company is worth 200 million. Yeah. Just different scale. 20 million, 1 million users. Yeah. It's unimaginable in traditional sense. And you're talking about bringing physical wire. It's not mobile, just mind you, where you just put a tower and a whole area lights up. You bring a physical fiber to each and every household, put a box, a router inside the homes. And yet, 20 million. We have been able to do it because we leverage expertise of this person, this businessman who is embedded in the ecosystem of urban India. It's not just urban India. Actually, he's everywhere, this cable operator. These cable operators have been everywhere around the globe. Yeah.
And is that different from way it was done before and the way your competitors did it in the past? They tried to do it all themselves or did they work with partners?
You get it right. The competitors are usually big, massive telcos. And when I say massive, these are really massive guys. We're talking about Mukesh Ambani, Reliance.
Yep.
You know Reliance Group.
Yeah, yeah.
Third, fourth richest in the world. Yeah, massive. So he has an arm which does telco business. Then there is Airtel, another massive group. Yeah. But these guys really focused on structured part of India because it's easy to do there because they were doing everything directly. Yeah. For example, Airtel started wireline broadband business in Delhi in 2004. And when we started in 2015, they covered just 25% of Delhi. They didn't go beyond it. Because why? It was unimaginable to go to such areas and provide broadband. They say, how would we maintain the wire? And is there really a market for this thing in such areas? Yeah. In my past life, I was working with such a telco. And the first thing you wanted to do when you went to such areas is to see laptop penetration in the area before you rolled out the network. But hey, it has changed. You don't need a laptop to consume internet. Your mobile phone is enough. And everybody in the city has a mobile phone. There's no human being without a mobile phone in any part of India now. Yeah. So you consume content. And also what has changed is what you do on internet. You see, a decade back, or 2 decades back, all you did was productivity enhancement on internet because the speeds were too low. It's like 1 Mbps. What would you do on Mbps? You will check your mail, reply, some official work, do some surfing on the web, probably go to Yahoo Messenger or something and do some chatting. But that's it. There's no real value for masses in it. But now it's primary driver of entertainment in a household. You know, you watch your videos, OTT, YouTube, anything. All entertainment is driven by wireline broadband. And that's what has changed. And you know what? Everybody needs entertainment, whether they're rich, poor, middle class. Everybody wants to be entertained after coming from a hard day of work. Yeah, and therefore, everybody is a buyer of wireless broadband. And this has changed drastically, which they didn't get initially. Yeah, And we took it on 2014 when we started. We said, we are going to position it as a primary driver of entertainment. We started with 20 Mbps speed when Delhi was at 1 Mbps. Why? Because we wanted to drive content viewing on internet.
Mm.
And in the first year itself, we had 100,000 users in the city.
It's amazing. I remember back in 2012 when I was an analyst in the stock market, I was looking at companies and one was a broadband company in Thailand that was focusing on the upcountry area, the rural area, and they were just knocking it out of the park there and they were expanding fantastically well. And then they came to Bangkok and I asked the owner, you know, how did you expand so quickly? He said, knock doors. He said, we just had our people out knocking on doors everywhere in every village, every place we could get. And then as soon as they came to Bangkok, I immediately used them, and I've used them and they've been pretty flawless. And so, and I, you know, see the value, I feel the value. And like you said, once you get the strong broadband internet, there's all kinds of things that you can do, like this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. And going by that knocking doors, we have around 2,500 people knocking doors around the country right now and selling broadband. That's how we sell.
Yeah.
By knocking doors.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, it's great to learn a little bit about what you're doing. And now it's time to share your worst investment ever. And since no one goes into their worst investment thinking it will be, tell us a bit about the circumstances leading up to it and then tell us your story.
Yeah. Okay. So 2-3 years into working, I mean, after doing my MBA, I started working in a broadband company. My first job, somehow I stumbled upon, was a broadband company called Hathaway. And within 2 years, I understood it's stupid to work for somebody. It's totally stupid if you're smart. So why? You get penalized for stuff you've not done, you know? For example, you're part of a team and somebody in the team makes a mistake, the whole team gets penalized. Your boss makes a mistake, you get penalized. The board makes wrong decision, you still get penalized. You're not in control of your destiny and you don't know what you're doing. And then obviously you'll be always in this cycle of slow upgrades because you get a hike every year. Then you slowly upgrade to next tier of motorcycle, then a small car, then a big car. You want to get over with it, this upgrade, and do stuff that you want to do, that you like to do, that you're passionate about doing, you know, and not the slow upgrades that a job gives you. And yeah, so within 2 years, I had decided that there's no way I'm going to work for these corporations and I'll do something on my own. But I'm talking about 2001 when I started working. And 2004, I realized I need to change. But at that one time, there was no ecosystem of angel investors. It didn't exist. I mean, Silicon Valley was just coming up. In India, there was no such concept of startups. And obviously, they would just, you know, honor your experience. You should have been experienced, 20 years experience, and then they would invest money on you, which is stupid. But whatever. Yeah. You know, Zepto guys, there's a company in India called Zepto, which was founded by two dropouts, college dropouts. They're like 20 and 21 now, 21 and 2 now. They're both worth $3 billion each. The company is worth $9 billion. This was never imaginable in my time, in that time.
Yeah.
You didn't do that. Yeah. So this hit me. I tried running around, trying to show my ideas to people. Okay, some of them were ready, but they said, okay, fine. We'll give you some salary to work on or some incentives. It's stupid. I'm doing my job in a corporation for salary. So somehow it didn't work out. It took me 10 years to convince somebody to invest money on me and to start this. Yeah. And again, these were not from India. These are Europeans. These were from Bulgaria. And I met them in 2009-10. And we met, we exchanged notes, and they had already done this. They had already started a company in Bulgaria and sold it off to Deutsche Telekom. They were in India scouting for opportunities, and somehow we met because I was meeting everybody I could while working with the corporation at the time and wasting my time. So that's how I met them. But again, after meeting them, it took me three, four years to convince them to start this company. And finally, we started in 2014 is when we decided we're going and first investment came. So I consider these 10, 12 years that I spent in, you know, making this foundation as my worst investment and best investment also. It's worse because I could have done this 10 years back and I would have been a billionaire by now. and best also because had I not gone through that grind and learned what I've learned, you know, the life it teaches you from these failures, that who you are ultimately. And then perhaps this also would have not been possible. Yeah. So this is my worst and as well as best at the same time. The other thing that your listeners might like to understand is the fact that, you know, job working for somebody is fragile. You know what's fragile? Fragile is something that breaks and you put stress on it. Yeah. It's simple. Fragile. Yeah. They'll say, no, a bigger corporations are not so fragile. If you work for a big corporation or the government, it's not so fragile. Fine. Understood. Given. It becomes robust. It becomes more robust. But robust is not opposed to fragile. Yeah. Something, when you put stress on it, it breaks. That's fragile. Then there should be a word for something when you put stress on it and it improves. Yeah. And that's anti-fragile. I'm not coining the term. Nicholas Taleb is already coining this term.
Yeah.
For example, your muscles, you put stress on them. What happens? The muscles grow. They don't break, but they grow. Yeah. Human body, human beings are biologically anti-fragile. When a child is born, you put vaccine. Now, what are vaccines? Vaccines are infections, small doses of infection. Body reacts and you develop immunity. Yeah. Human beings by design are anti-fragile. They react to environment through stressors. Therefore, this 12 years of stress on my body probably improved me to such an extent that I can now do what I am doing. Yeah. Entrepreneurship by design is anti-fragile. Every failure teaches you something. By every failure, you learn something and you become a better version of yourself. Yeah. In a job, if you fail, you go down, you're dead. In entrepreneurship, every failure teaches you something, it makes you stronger, makes you better in doing what you're doing. So therefore, if you are still working for somebody, take my word for it. It's not worth it. Leave it. Do something you're passionate about. Nobody can beat you at what you're good at.
Yeah. You know, Vivek, you made me think of a conversation I had with my mother this morning. She lives with me here in Bangkok. She's 85 years old, and she was pretty tough when I was young, and she made me, you know, suffer the consequences of my bad behavior. And I was telling my story to someone in front of her, and she listened to it. And then this morning she said to me, "I feel bad that maybe I was too tough on you." And I said, "There's two things that you need to think about in this case, Mom. The first one is you did the best that you could with what you knew at the time. That's number one. Number two is look at me now. I'm stronger because you were tougher." And it made me think about the anti-fragile thing that you're talking about, which I think, and it also made me think that, you know, one of the challenges when you're young and you're going through this, you know, excitement is that it's hard. It's hard to get that momentum. It's hard to find the right people to invest. It's hard to articulate the idea. It's hard to see the idea sometimes. So when we look back, we say, "I wish I could have figured it out faster." But that's where I'm kind of curious, like, what would be your advice or your idea for a young person that's currently in your situation? They have energy, they have excitement, they want to get out. But, you know, what advice would you give them to make sure that they don't have to suffer for 10 years or so in the wilderness?
Yep. So one, they're luckier than me because there is the ecosystem already out there. We know, the world knows what startups are. There is a whole network of startups and investors, angel investors, Series A investors, Series B investors. The whole ecosystem is ready. So first and foremost, they want to be where startups are. They want to be in places where this ecosystem exists. If they are at the wrong place, this is the first thing. If they are living in a village still, it's not going to happen there. Yeah, believe me, it's not going to happen there. They're going to waste their time there. They need to be where the action is. That's the first thing. Second, the most important thing is to decide what you want to do. That's very important for everything in life. It's important for who you want to be, who's going to be your life partner, who's going to be your business partner. Choosing what you want to do, choosing who you want to be, should be taken more seriously, and you should spend most time there. Why? Because this is like once in a lifetime shot. If you got to get it wrong, you will lose many, many, many years in it. Yeah. So choose very carefully. And you want to choose stuff what you're good at naturally. Why? Because nobody can beat Andrew at doing this podcast. There's nobody like him. He's a unique person. Yeah. So you cannot challenge Andrew in being Andrew. So that's not possible. So you want to be doing what you're naturally good at. Because if you're doing something which can be taught in a university, they'll produce hundreds and thousands more like you, and you'll be beaten in that game. Yeah. No use doing that stuff. Do what you're naturally good at. Because if somebody tries to compete with you, they'll be working, you'll be enjoying. Yeah, because that's what you do. Yeah, that is who you are. So that's very important. Choose what you like doing. And the other thing is failures. Again, what you were saying, Andrew, initially there will be failures, there'll be naysayers. People more often than not will put you down. They'll say, it's not doable. Come on. I mean, just don't listen. Listen to your own inner self. If you're good at it, you see a problem that you can solve, you have a solution for the problem, and the problem can be made with a business model, go for it. Go for it. Steal, beg, borrow, steal, and start a use case. Once you have a pilot, then there will be people out there. There are millions, hundreds or hundreds of people out there who can fund it if it's a viable thing. So, yeah, 2-3 advices. As I said, first, be where the action is. Don't waste your time in places where there's no action. Second, do what you're naturally good at doing, what you enjoy doing. And third, create a test case. Mm-hmm. Beware of naysayers. Yeah, such advisors. For example, when Henry Ford started his automobile company, people asked him, did you take advice from the people, from the consumers? He said, yeah, the advice I was taking when I went to people, what do you want for transportation? And I asked this question. They said, faster horses. Yeah. And if I've been looking around and taking advice, I would still be riding the horse. There'll be no cars.
Yeah.
So if you are passionate about something and you know you're there, you have an idea, go for it. Don't wait.
Fantastic advice. I was just talking with a young guy who's graduating from university in the US, coming back to Thailand. And he was asking me some advice on things. And I just said, you got to be careful asking me because I don't listen to people and I don't listen and I don't follow the rules. I believe that I can, because he asked me, why did you go to Thailand in 1992 and why did you stay? And I said, you know, I found a job as a financial analyst in the stock market in Thailand. And every day I went home, I was so happy about what I was doing. I was also teaching and I set up my own business with my best friend. I had so much going on that I was so happy. And I thought, why would I change anything if I'm doing everything? I said, I had one rule in my life, and that was all I asked for is to have a happy day every day. And so I want to ask you now, for someone that's empowered and excited about what you've shared, what's a resource or, you know, a method or anything that you can help provide them, a book or any type of resource to help them do these things to become, you know, successful?
Yeah, it depends on who I'm talking to. If it's somebody who's interested in startups and wants to be successful in business, there are certain foundational texts that they should be reading. Nicholas Taleb is one author they need to read. Mm-hmm. They need to read for sure. You know, there's this whole Incognito series. It starts with Fooled by Randomness. There's one book called Fooled by Randomness. One is Antifragile. The other one is Black Swan. Yeah, there are book of prophecies. There are 4 or 5 books. If you've not read them, drop everything else from your list and read this guy. Read these books this year. This is enough for you to start with. That's one thing. It will change your perspective completely, smile you, for business at least. Secondly, if you need to be cognizant of your own biases, how your own mind plays with you. And Gentleman was my favorite, and he died, unfortunately, 2-3 days back. I mean, last week, I think. And I'm talking about Danny Kahneman. And his Thinking Fast, Think Slow, you need to read. Mm. And at the same time, there's a gentleman in Silicon Valley, and he's called Naval Ravikant. And you need to, I mean, he's not written a book. There's a book called Almanac of Naval Ravikant. Go and read that. Mm. And once you have read all 3 people, you'll be a much changed person and you'll be a much better person, not just in business, as a human being also, we would have improved a lot. Mm. I would say start with that and rest will follow.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's your homework. We've got Taleb, and that's Fooled by Randomness. That's Black Swan, and that's Anti-Fragile. We got Daniel Kahneman, and that is Thinking Fast and Slow. And then the final one is the Almanac of, what is his name again? I forgot.
Naval Ravikant.
Yes. That's the only one I haven't read. So I think I got some homework from you, but that's a great list. I'll have a link to all those in the show notes. Last question for you. This is my most interesting question for you because you're so full of energy and passion for what you do. What's your number one goal for the next 12 months?
We have to double the user base. It may not happen in 12 months, but 12 months is OKR, the BHAG goal that we have taken internally. Let's hope we're able to do it.
I can't wait to hear from you in a year from now, and we'll celebrate. If you're not doubled, you'll be close, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, there you have it. Another story of loss to keep you winning. Remember, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives. And we just got some tips today. As we conclude, Vivek, I want to thank you again for joining our mission. And on behalf of Ace Dots Academy, I hereby award you alumni status for turning your worst investment ever into your best teaching moment. Do you have any parting words for the audience?
My words would be focus on your goal, look at the leverage inherent in the ecosystem, and make your mark in the world.
Boom. That's a wrap on another great story to help us create, grow, and protect our wealth. Fellow risk takers, let's celebrate that today we added one more person to our mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives. This is your worst podcast host, Andrew Stott, saying, I'll see you on the upside.